Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized look at this week in the Capitol. Before we get into the much news, take a look at WISI was there. Especially interesting segment. Some of the clips this week, Brazilian blowouts were debated on the floor of the state Senate. Senator Leah Vukmir defends carjacking, being convicted of potential 15-year prison sentences. Jennifer Schilling and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss respond to the tragic shootings, the baseball field in D.C. A footnote, Jennifer Schilling's parents were killed, shot to death in January 1993 in their Illinois restaurant. And finally, the state Medicaid director defends having some of the 149 childless adults on Medicaid take drug tests and drug screens. WISI was there, coming at you.
I had a girlfriend who wanted to get a Brazilian blowout. And I told her, I said, well, unless you go to the hair salon that I go to, I wouldn't advise it because the chemicals are exceptionally strong. She said, oh, no, I've been going to my hairstylist for years and she could do it. My girlfriend went to her appointment in a car. She left that appointment in an ambulance.
There are 32 other states that we're mirroring with this bill, and I have not seen any headlines that there's been death by Brazilian blowout in any of those states. I've been to some of those states, and I haven't seen a lot of bad hairdos. So maybe I have, but it's an equal number in this state as well.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, allowing repeat carjackings over and over again, re-victimizing our communities is insanity. And we have to do something about it.
I wanted to talk about that during Senate Bill 58, but you know what? I didn't want to be ruled non-germane. I didn't want to be ruled out of order. But when is it germane? When is it in order to talk about what we can do about what many of us feel is the insanity of gun violence in this country?
Now, let's say that the circumstances would have happened where the police were not there. Having somebody who had a weapon to be able to discharge it to defend themselves probably would have been the second best option as opposed to just sitting there waiting for other things to happen.
And I saw some of the early responses that some have said, well, I wasn't armed this morning. I wasn't armed at the baseball field, but good God, who plays catcher with a gun in the waistband of their baseball pants?
I think that constitutional rights are to be protected, and that's why I'm proud of the fact that the Assembly allows people to carry legally, no doubt whatsoever. That's what they do. We don't have a lot, but we have some. And I think that you're right. If a shooter came in, would I rather have, you know, somebody who is able to respond? Of course. Be they a trained officer, which would be my first option, or somebody who has a weapon also.
It's not cruel to help someone with a drug problem receive treatment for that problem at the Medicaid program's expense, and then translate that into a family-sustaining job. So I think it's pretty straightforward, but obviously for political purposes, it can be called something else.
Busy week in the Capitol, JR. I want to open with what I thought was, I enjoyed the debate in the Assembly on whether to join the states calling for a federal constitutional convention, which they say would do one thing, balance the federal budget, which is very debatable. Just quickly, the Assembly passed this resolution. Resolved by the Assembly, the Senate concurring that the legislature of the state of Wisconsin herewith respectfully applies to Congress for the calling of a convention for proposing amendments for the limited purpose of requiring the federal government to operate under a balanced budget. 2 points. The Assembly went first on this. The Senate has not yet approved it. And then, J.R., what's your take? 7 Republicans voted against this.
There's the worry about opening Pandora's box of what could happen. Now, there's enabling legislation that goes along with this resolution that
AB 165.
You guys can only do this. If you go beyond that, you get pulled back. But what other states do, I think they're getting awfully close to the mark they need.
They need 34?
Getting within shouting distance of that if they really want to do this. But it'll be interesting to watch how it plays out in the Senate. For moderates, this is not exactly a priority, but for conservatives, I mean, like real, like dyed-in-the-wool conservatives, this is a chance to send a message to the federal government about you have to now balance your budget.
Yeah, and it was me who said that I really liked the debate. So let's listen to a little bit of those snippets. And the ending is Representative Jimmy Anderson. He operates from a wheelchair because of an auto accident. So let's listen to a few minutes of the debate in the Assembly on the resolutions to call a federal constitutional convention.
Our debt today is over $20 trillion. What is $20 trillion? It is 20 million million. It's a 2 followed by 13 zeros. Laying down dollar bills end to end, you can circle the earth 76,000 times. It would take 634,000 years to count to 1 trillion. Our debt in gallons would fill over 30 million Olympic-sized swimming pools. We are drowning in debt.
If we had a balanced budget, if we ever would have gotten Eisenhower's interstate system, I wonder if we would have got President Kennedy's New Frontier, where he promised to put a man on the moon. The Manhattan Project, I think all of us know how that ended World War II. Could have that been done with a balanced budget?
It was the states that fought and passed laws to allow women the right to vote before Congress ever brought forward that provision to change our Constitution.
This is terrifying. The information that I've been provided by conservative interest groups across the nation is supposed to make me feel better. The authors of these resolutions today said, trust us. There is no way I trust you with our Constitution.
We do it every single year in Wisconsin. We balance our budget. We make sure that our revenues meet our expenses. And you know what? We still have a great school system. We still have a great university system. We still have the ability to run government efficiently. This is a simple vote. It should be unanimous because it empowers states where we serve. Why do you trust people who get elected to Congress to be the only ones that can amend our Constitution?
There's a process to accomplish those goals that doesn't require a constitutional convention. They're called elections. Run on it. Run on cutting Medicare. Run on cutting our military budget. Run on dismantling the federal government. If you can run and win on those goals, then great. But don't try to use this Trojan horse to get through the back door and to completely dismantle our federal government.
Jer, I've spent some time going through the Ledge Council summaries of this Constitution. Let's just wrap it up this way. And if you're a delegate to any federal convention, the legislative leaders are making sure that they tell you what to do, and they're probably going to be there. So being a delegate means raising your hand and doing yes or no, only what the legislative leaders say. Yeah. That's no big surprise, is it?
No, they want to keep tight lit up. Well, they're trying to cut down the fear from the opponents of this opens a door to what? What else are you going to put in the Constitution? What else are you going to rewrite? What else are you going to take out? So there's a little, playing with fire there with the Constitutional Convention.
And you heard the Dems say it could put the Second Amendment at risk. Uh-oh, there goes your guns. First Amendment at risk, free speech, right
really
to assemble.
A balanced budget, the point they're making, what Jimmy Anderson made, is how are you going to balance a budget right now? I mean, that's going to require some deep, deep cuts, and that's going to really impact a lot of lives in this country.
Okay, second subject. JR, let's talk about joint finance coming back after almost 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, first of all, Nygren said it's a good thing that we're back. They were able to give 2% annual pay raises to state employees and UW employees. They stopped the group insurance board from taking a step towards self-insurance. By the way, that was 16-0. Any surprise there?
No. I mean, it's kind of funny that there's like breaking news yesterday that the committee was going to reject the contracts. We knew that from like months ago, and they basically laid out for us weeks ago, Nygren and Darling, we're not going to do these. They're not going to happen.
Right. Did they find the $60 million that the governor had put in his budget?
Well, if you go back and look at the actions they've taken so far leading up to this week, they already built in a cushion. They just haven't like slotted in where that money's going to go because these final pieces now that come up are transportation, K-12, taxes. They need a little bit of room to move, to operate, before that thing's all everything's all locked in.
Right. They also approved. They also funded the corrections department. How significant was it that they were able to come back together? Or given the distance on those big three, taxes, transportation, K-12, we got a long way to go.
Well, Co-Chair Darling said they'll be back next week, and then Thursday, she said keep the Thursday open. So it's not a debt set in stone, but keep Thursday open. But what the message was from the co-chairs ahead of the meeting yesterday was, we're getting close on K-12. But we're not there in transportation. K-12, when I talked to people last week, the whole key of that debate is, what property tax number are you going to use? Remember, Governor Walker wants property tax bills that go out in December of 18 to be lower than 14. The Senate has basically said, we're with Governor Walker on this. The Assembly's not really said what its number is going to be. Is it 16? Because they went up from 14 to 16. They went up on this mythical median valued home. So is it 16? Even with their education plan, it goes down from 16, also below 10 before they took over. So you got to pick which number you're going to use. Yep. That sets the framework of how much money you have to work with. There has been talk from Senate Republicans of doing a categorical aid with state dollars to help low-spending school districts, which would eliminate the need under the Assembly GOP plan to ask for more property tax dollars.
Property tax levy of $92
million. So you can see a path to getting K-12 done. It's about the final numbers. What else is added into that package? We all know that certain policy items sometimes end up in omnibus motions and joint finance. Once that piece is taken care of, then the taxes piece comes in, because you figure how much GPR you have left to play with on the air. Is it going to be the personal property tax being eliminated, which is the property tax that businesses pay on property?
A priority of CPAs, Representative Cuenca and Senator Markline.
Is it going to be Governor Walker's lowering and collapsing of income tax brackets? Which is about $204 million in this biennium. By the way, the personal property tax is about $250-$260, real close. Start adding in the $20 million that he wants to put in the rainy day fund, which Joint Finance yesterday said we're not going to take up. You start doing the math, and you can get there to at least a phase out of the personal property tax in this biennium. But like we've talked before, it's a buy-down. Yeah. It's the state taking things off the property tax rolls and putting on our income tax, sales tax, and excise taxes.
And no sign of any potential compromise, even talks on transportation funding?
I'm not seeing like a big powwow just yet. Okay. Now, these things happen, like we've watched for a long time. Finance all of a sudden will like come together, have three omnibus motions at 5 o'clock on a Thursday. Here you go, guys, digest these, come back in a couple hours for voting, we go to 5 o'clock on Friday morning. So could it happen on Thursday?
Or 5 o'clock on Monday, July 3rd.
So could it happen?
Which
sure.
2 years ago threatened the open records law.
Sure, could it happen? Yes, but I think they're going to be a little bit longer on transportation right now. That'd be my guess.
Okay, next subject. JR, I was surprised. Justice Gableman announced yesterday in a statement he will not seek re-election in April. Here's three things he didn't say. He didn't say why. Mm-hmm. He didn't say whether he will leave early. He didn't say he's 50 years old. He's a native of Waukesha County, graduate of New Berlin West High School, I think. He didn't say what he's going to do next. So help me understand why he's leaving and why now.
Why now is that I've been told that the conservative coalition that gets involved in these races was kind of like, okay, what are you going to do? It is, you know, mid-June of the year before your election. A year ago, Annette Ziegler, who was up this spring, did a fundraising blitz in the last half of June and raised more than $200,000 in about 2.5 weeks. We have not seen anything from Michael Gableman that even matches or even like suggests he was gearing up like that. What Ziegler did helped send a message of, if you're going to come after me, I'm going to be well-funded, organized, and I'm ready to go. Gableman sent none of those signs. So there are people who are involved in things saying, okay, what's the decision going to be? The pressure was mounting to make a call. So there's that piece of it. Next thing, will he serve out the full term? His statement yesterday does not address that. In talking to a spokesman who handled the announcement, he said, it is my quote-unquote understanding he will fill the term. Read between the lines. There is no guarantee Michael Gableman will serve out this term, which ends in August of 2018.
Yes.
Why is that important? If he leaves, Governor Walker the opportunity to appoint his third justice to the Supreme Court.
In 3 years.
And that would give that person the power of incumbency. Now, even though it would be a short incumbency, it's a power of incumbency when you run to retain the seat for a full 10-year term. That has some sway with voters. You know, you have the robe. You can tell you're a sitting justice. That's a little bit of a benefit for you. For liberals, they're looking at Gableman going, he was the ideal candidate to run against next year. Because he's got baggage galore. I mean, go back to when he ran.
The 2008 ad against Justice Louis Butler.
Resulted in an ethics complaint that deadlocked to the Supreme Court.
3-3.
He also, by the way, as part of that complaint, signed a deal with Michael Bessin Friedrich to have an attorney from there to have his legal representation. He'd only have to pay for the legal representation if he won and convinced the state to reimburse him for his legal fees, which didn't happen.
Bottom line, he accepted free legal representation. His defense from Michael Best and Friedrich.
Yeah.
And One Wisconsin Now says that's $500,000?
I don't ever seen like a final tab on what it was.
Maybe the number's wrong.
And they've disputed, you know.
A substantive number.
And his defenders have said, hey, this is not anything improper. But go beyond that. He authored the Act 10 decision. He authored the John Doe decision shutting it down. I mean, there are all kinds of things you could use against Gableman in an environment that looks next year like it's going to be good for Democrats. They excite the Democratic base. So they lose that opportunity, not having a run. Liberals also face the prospect of a conservative justice appointed to the court who has a very small record compared to Gableman's almost 10-year record, a small one with none of the baggage. Makes it hard to run against that kind
of candidate. But I want to ask you about something that you reported. Chief Justice Rogan's Act gave one of the challengers, Rebecca Dallet, a Milwaukee County, a donation of $2,500
when she was running for Milwaukee County Circuit Court, yes.
Okay. The Chief Justice endorsed her when she was running for Milwaukee, but what are the implications now that she's running for the Supreme Court, Gableman's seat?
Before the Gableman announcement, this was being teed up as a race where you had a primary of Gableman as a conservative candidate, Tim Burns, Mass attorney, as the unabashed progressive candidate, and Rebecca Dallet trying to run kind of in the middle somewhere, a little bit left of center, but kind of a middle, you know, middle jurist.
11 years as a prosecutor.
Yes. The Rogensack contribution raises the question of, okay, well, will she be part of the Rogensack majority, which is 5-2 in the court right now, or will she truly be an independent justice now? Her campaign says, look, she is close friends with Rogensack's daughter, who's also judge, Milwaukee Circuit Court. She's also endorsed Abramson and Ann Walsh, probably, for their reelection bids. So she is a kind of a across the spectrum kind of judge. But my guess is going to be that Burns and company will use this against her in the campaign, saying, look, she's somebody who's not one of us, the progressive wing of voters. So that, and that's important because last year we saw in a primary with Justice Bradley, Rebecca Bradley, conservative, Joanne Kloppenburg, the unabashed progressive, and Joe Donald as kind of the moderate candidate, got 12% of the vote.
But we woke up this morning to a press release from the same person that issued the press release, Gableman not going to run, introducing a new candidate, a third candidate, Sauk County Judge Michael Skronik. Well, is he trying to lay claim to being the conservative in the race? Do you expect other conservatives to get in?
My experience covering these races has been that in judicial races that, one, there's an opportunity like this, lots of people get together and have lots of conversations, and there's kind of like this behind-the-scenes discussion of who's going to run for what, and it's who's right for. So he's trying to get out in front of this and be the person to get that kind of, coalition behind him. Names will float, I guarantee you that. I talked to Jennifer Doro, who's a Waukesha County judge, said I'm not running in 2018. I'm looking at 19.
About Jim Troupas, remember? Former Dane County Circuit Court judge who chose not to seek re-election.
Lots of names will float.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, this becomes a much more attractive job if it's an appointment. I don't care what side of the aisle you're from. You'd rather be appointed to the Supreme Court than to run for an open seat because it's just much easier and the advantages there. So if it becomes an appointment, expect a broad field of people looking to get that appointment from Governor Walker.
Bottom line, do you expect Gableman to resign before his term is up in August?
I don't know. It depends on what the opportunity has to take in the private sector or what he may land that would give him something to do. I mean, it's, he's getting paid six figures for another year and 3 months. That's not something to blow your nose at. So
that's true.
We'll see.
That's true. Okay, new subject. The state Senate put on the governor's desk two changes to fight the opioid and drug abuse. I'm really interested in one of them, JR, involuntary commitment. Right now, if alcohol abuse has rendered you incapable of fighting it, living your life, hurting you physically, emotionally, socially, you can be involuntarily committed upon the petition of three adults. This, according to the Ledge Council summary, this extends that to drug abuse. I see that as a big deal. Agree?
Oh, absolutely. And then the other bill adds, we had a bill passed, this is called the Hope Agenda from John Nygren.
Yes.
We had a bill before that said, okay, if somebody's overdosing or think they're overdosing, if you call the cops or the rescue squad,
you're the aider.
We won't prosecute you. It adds new layers to the aider and the aided to avoid prosecution because obviously you're doing some illegal using drugs when the overdose occurs. For the person who is aided, the person we think is overdosing, There are ways to avoid prosecution. If you go, for example, you can go to county jail, I think, for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Ways to get treatment. So there are all kinds of new layers attacking this problem, not just from the lock 'em up perspective, but how do you treat the symptoms at the lower level?
Yeah, and also there's a provision in the amendment, which is on the governor's desk as part of the bill. Deferred prosecution, if treatment is completed, must be offered to someone who overdoses who is charged with possession.
And if the treatment is part of that, if part of those provisions, if the treatment is somewhat not available,
yeah,
or you can't afford it, then you get at least 2 weeks in county jail as part of this deferred prosecution.
15 days.
Yes.
Okay, more than two weeks. Okay. Let's see, where are we now? Oh, the Senate debate on carjacking. Mm-hmm. So carjacking, the stereotype is usually done by teenagers,
mm-hmm,
18 to 22. 15 years in prison seems kind of steep, but former retired Racine police cop, Senator Van Wongard, says this has gotten to be a badge of honor. But Chris Larson was one of seven Democrats who voted against it. Trying to lock up more kids isn't working. The number of carjackings in Milwaukee went from 354 in 2014 to 464, a 31% increase in 2016, and repeat offenders could face 12 years in prison. Our prisons are already full. Mm. Isn't that part of the debate here?
That's probably the argument against it. Also, that there are other ways to attack this problem, and that carjackings are starting to creep down in Milwaukee especially. What was really interesting about the debate was that it split the Milwaukee Democratic delegation.
It did.
Where you had Larson and
Lena
voting against it. So you had Tim Carpenter and Tanya Johnson voting for it. So there is a split a little bit in the delegation about this, and Latanya Johnson's point was, yes, and you treat the root of these problems with these teenagers up front, but once they put a gun in your face, then it's not time to offer them a job. It's time to have a penalty to go along with this crime.
Right, but go back to whether it would boost prison costs.
Oh, yeah.
Our prisons are already overcrowded.
Oh, yeah. There's a long-term problem for Wisconsin right now. We already have a high incarceration rate, especially for African-American males in the
highest
state.
Highest African-American incarceration rate in the nation.
So there's already talk about replacing the prison up in Green Bay. We have capacity problems. This budget, Governor Walker, instead of doing expansion, instead of study, I believe, in this budget to look at where we should go going forward, but there is a capacity problem we've been dealing with for a long time in Wisconsin that's getting worse.
Okay.
Go ahead. Drunk driving?
Yes.
All these bills you want to do to attack drunk driving? There's another avenue that will increase the prison population going forward if we do those bills.
Yes, and the last thing this governor is going to do is build a new prison. Right, because he hasn't visited one since he's been in office. He said that. Okay, let's go to the president's visit to Waukesha County and to a fundraiser. I was intrigued. The governor hints major incredible manufacturer may come to Wisconsin. You probably haven't been done any of your own reporting on this, but all the others, the AP and the mm-hmm. Journal Sentinel reporting that it's Foxconn, which is this giant from the Middle East,
yeah,
right? There's no secret that it's Foxconn.
What's interesting is for Governor Walker, I mean, this would be good news because we're a year out from a re-election bid. If you landed a major manufacturer in your backyard with thousands of jobs and a massive investment, that wouldn't be too shabby. Governor Walker's in Japan for a brief visit recently. They don't tell us what it was about. But, oh, by the way, Michigan also, we believe, has been in competition for these jobs. So interesting how that plays out. But President Trump was touting about how Wisconsin has some good news soon.
Right. And then the president went to a closed-door fundraiser for Walker. That's got to help the governor. I mean, not like he needs money with his ability to raise money. But there was the president again coming back to Wisconsin, which played a key role in his election.
Well, the Walker campaign confirmed Sarah Sanders, one of Trump's spokespeople, on the flight back from Wisconsin. So there were 300 people at the fundraiser. The Walker campaign confirmed that number. They haven't said how much was raised, but from people I've talked to who either there had friends there, the president bragging about, you know, $1.5 million, then, well, maybe $1 million. So somewhere in that seven-figure range raised in one night, that's nothing to sneeze at. I remember Governor Walker told me back in December during his end-of-the-year interviews that his fundraising report in July of this year would send a message about what his intentions. That $1.5 million, whatever number it was, mm-hmm, would help send a pretty good message about what he's going to do.
He also toured Waukesha County Tech College, mm-hmm, talking about the apprentice programs.
And Governor Walker's been D.C. on Thursday to talk about that same thing.
And the Democrats quickly said, look at the governor's very tentative budget. It would. You saw the press release. I think it was from Tammy Baldwin or Capitol Democrats here saying your budget guts the apprenticeship program that you just touted at Waukesha County Technical College.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Okay, let's go to your stock reports.
So, rising Governor Walker. So we kind of talked a little bit about the president coming in. There are a couple things about this. One, Governor Walker has a couple of vulnerabilities, right, or perceived vulnerabilities going into reelection. One is K-12 funding, take care of the budget. Two is the jobs promise. He promised 250,000 new jobs his first term. We are now 6 years plus in, and he's nowhere near that. I think 70,000 short as the last one.
I thought he was a little bit over 200, but I could be wrong.
Well, through the end of 2016, and 2016 was his worst year for job creation the whole time he's been in office.
Manufacturing jobs lost 33,800.
But in 2014, Governor Walker was hammered on that issue in his reelection bid and won anyway because he was able to point to other things like the unemployment rate and kind of muddy the water a little bit about, yeah, I promised this, but this is the important number to focus on. Well, here you have a governor now who's going to possibly this big boost with a new plan, if it's going to happen. Also, unemployment rate down to 3.1%, lowest since 1999.
1999.
There's your fodder to muddy the water again about the jobs promise or the growth rate and say, hey, we're having problems growing jobs, filling jobs because we need more qualified people. He points to 96,000 or 100,000 open jobs in the state website all the time. So there's a way to address that vulnerability. Then with Trump, you know, there's a kind of a yin and yang with having President Trump doing things for you, right? On the one hand, his numbers are not very good right now. So he could be a drag next year. But let's be honest. All Republicans running next year are going to have Trump as a drag on them. Unless you create serious space for the president, I don't know how you do that, he's going to be a factor in the ballot next year, whether good or bad. So for Walker, having come in, you raise good money off him coming in. And oh, by the way, these Trump voters are in western Wisconsin, North Wisconsin. If Republicans can keep them turned on and turn out next year, it may help mitigate some of the drop-off you see from Republicans and what we expect to see from Republicans in a year that might not be good for the White House. So
even though the morning news shows reported that President Trump's popularity, 35%.
Yeah, but do those Trump voters still turn out? Because Walker is popular. Remember, Walker and the Republican base been pretty good. Yeah, he softened a bit during his presidential bid, but if he keeps that Republican base locked in and they turn out next year and he gets the Trump voters and the Dems don't have a strong candidate yet, it's not a bad place to be.
And his last popularity in the
Marquette
Franklin
poll was still upside down, but was getting better.
But with slowly improving. Mm-hmm. Okay, mixed.
So stop me for this before... Steve, but Ryan Priebus' job may be in jeopardy. It's like every week there is a news story. What was it? I think the Washington Post reported recently that he may be going to Greece to be ambassador.
Is this the Rewind show from a month ago, 2 months ago?
Eric Erickson blogged that Priebus' departure was imminent. Politico had a story that Trump has given him a July 4th deadline to clean house or he's gone. It's just a constant churn of speculation about him. And what's interesting
is
you have like these competing factions, right, in the White House.
Yeah.
They all seem to be leaking to different people and make themselves look better. And Priebus seems to be caught as. Now, he set himself up for some criticism this week where they had this open cabinet meeting on Monday, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he basically, like, at the altar of Donald Trump, thank you for the honor of being in this cabinet. Now, I talked to somebody who's at one of the fundraisers this week with the president and Governor Walker, and I guess Ryan's got a shout out from the president. Don't believe the fake news is a great guy kind of thing. But it's just a constant churn. And all the stories describe a guy who's working impossible hours trying to bring order to this chaotic White House. One, can he last? And two, does he want to last? At one point, you say, this is too crazy for anybody, right, and get out.
Right. That's a good call. Falling.
Domestic partners. So we knew going into the budget debate that Governor Walker wanted to end health insurance coverage for domestic partners of state and public local employees,
yes,
right? That was clear. His argument was, you now have marriage as an option. We should do this. It also, by the way, would save several million dollars in the process. But that there was a policy decision behind this of we no longer need to have a domestic partner registry for state employees because they can get married. What we didn't know was that joint finance would go a step further and say, okay, this registry we've had since 2009 ends, essentially. Yeah, if you're on it, you're okay, but no more new ones unless you were registered 6 months before the bill takes effect. Well, we didn't know this amendment was coming last night. So now, let's say you get this on July 1st, unless you're signed up by the end of December, you can't get on the registry anymore.
Right, abolish domestic partner.
So it goes, but it's still a policy decision by Republicans of, if you can get married, why do you need these? Because this was created in 2009 by Governor Doyle and Democrats as a response to the gay marriage amendment, which said you cannot have gay marriage or something substantially similar to marriage for same-sex couples. This is a way to give them visitation rights, okay. Certain kind of rights that recognize relationships. So you can argue, do you need any more if you can get married?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, let's look ahead quickly to next week. Why is the assembly going to take 11 hours on Wednesday? Is it because of campus free speech? We're almost out of time.
They like to take their time on lots of things. But yeah, that's going to be a controversial discussion.
And the thing to watch next Thursday on Joint Finance is whether they come back on K-12 and...
K-12 and taxes. Do they get one? They get two? I'm not sure they get three, but at least one we hope they'll knock out to kind of pave the way for the future deal in this budget.
That's Rewind for this week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And J.R., have a great vacation next
Thank
week.
You.
Jason Stein of the Milwaukee Journal will be filling in for you.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.